we're kind of looking at the possibility that maybe where there is only one individual, that we would recommend this person to council, and that, you know, this wouldn't be part of the actual motion, but we would, in speaking with Alex and Chris, saying if there's something that comes out of, because you're going to have a bit of a discussion with the individual beforehand, if it proves to be something that would make it unsatisfactory, that we would just, you know, say that we would not accept. So we're going with the fact that the person may be appropriate, and to get a subcommittee, and to get, when it is only one person, so if somebody is prepared to make a motion that we approve this individual to be a member of the at-large of the Fire and Emergency Services Committee of the Municipal District of Lunenburg.
I'll move.
Moved. Seconded by Dean. All right. Any questions on the motion? Questions been called. All those in favor signify by raising the right hand. Against, motion carried. The next item on the agenda are, I think, attached, and you, most of you, I'm sure, have read them. They're a summary of the events that took place at the workshop regarding the code of conduct and the driver's standard report. And that starts on the next page of the agenda package. And Alex or Chris, I'm not sure who was going to I think certainly from my experience at the meeting, we had three groups. We went off into those three groups, and we came back, and then we heard the different things from those three groups. And, you know, I found it rather interesting, actually, because, in fact, changed some of my opinions in my mind when I heard some of the opinions of the other groups, because some of it made sense. And you guys, you people here, the staff, have taken that and reviewed it, wrote it up in such a way that we can go through it and understand how you got to maybe some of the suggestions and recommendations and so on. So however you want to do that, that'd be great.
I appreciate the introduction, Brian. Thank you for explaining for the committee and for the recording the process that we used. I'll be speaking tonight about the code of conduct element, and Chris will be going over the driver training. And I'm actually going to start towards the end of the report under the work plan section, just so it's clear what I hope can come out of the committee tonight. So I'd like to have some discussion on the elements around the code of conduct, and then whatever the committee decides is appropriate, I would like to send those to the Lunenburg Regional Group for discussion so that we can make sure that we've had some good feedback before we start drafting proposals. So the feedback would come back to this committee, and then we'd shape together the policy amendments and the draft code of conduct. From there, we'd bring it up to council to see if they were comfortable with it, and then hopefully this would work in conjunction with the planning for the annual general meeting, so we could then present it, the final version, to the annual general meeting and then have that approved. So now that you understand, I'm not asking you to approve a code of conduct tonight. I'll start talking about some of the different elements. Exactly, yes. So we have, just in the background, I won't go over this again, as the committee has discussed it a couple of times. It was also recently in the news, recently. but there was an incident in Cumberland County. It was quite serious. And had some real ramifications for the municipality and the Cumberland County Fire Service. We had some discussions here locally and realized that we had some similar risks. So we wanted to have conversations to see what might be needed to change to protect reputation and also some legal and financial liabilities for fire departments and for the municipality. So we hosted a workshop which included the FESC members and some volunteers from the fire service. We really appreciated them taking more time out of their lives to volunteer and provide their expertise. The report in the package summarizes the discussion on each of the points, so I'm not going to go over word for word, but I am going to highlight some key recommendations that staff would like to make so that the committee can have a discussion around those. So I'll start by pointing out that we've identified, in order for there to be a fully functioning code of conduct, you would need to create a set of behaviors that would go into the code, saying things that you expect or expect not to happen. But you also need to have a form of review mechanism. There has to be some discipline if there's violation of the code, and then some form of enforcement in order to make sure that that discipline happens. And so these elements were discussed at the workshop. You can see at the bottom of page 2 of the report a list based on one of the discussion topics for each of the small groups, and then the summary as a larger group, what the key behaviors were identified for a first draft of the code of conduct. So one is participating in fire department activities while under the influence of drugs or alcohol, harassment or discrimination, fraud, theft, and other criminal behaviors, issues of professionalism at the fire scene, conflicts of interest, social media use that impacts the reputation of the department, or a failure to report a violation of this code by a fellow senior official. Oh, and I should mention, the concepts we are discussing are not intended to replace personnel policies or codes of conduct or behavior systems that are in place within fire departments. This is to address the more complex situation where you have significant behavioral issues with either a chief or a senior officer in the department. So that's the intended application. Would the committee like to discuss each of the components in turn, or would you like me to complete a summary and then come back to each of the items? Yeah. Okay, great. So those are the elements of the code. In terms of the investigation process, there was a number of discussions about different options that could be pursued. Staff are recommending a mirror to the system that exists for municipal code of conduct, conduct for municipal elected officials. Yep. So that would involve having an independent investigator. If there was a concern that was raised, then it's reviewed by a third party that has some impartiality, as opposed to having, for example, members of the Fire and Emergency Services Committee or a staff member review it. So they would first determine if there's merit, so that you're not spending time and cost on an investigation that didn't have enough substance to it. If there was, then there'd be some notification to the responding department and the individuals involved, as well as to the municipality. And then there would be an investigation to determine if there had been a breach. So we're looking for confirmation from the committee that you support that as the recommendation for consultation with the Lunenburg Regional Fire Services Group. In terms of some kind of enforcement or remedial action, the report from the independent investigator we are recommending would go to either a panel appointed from this committee or a panel appointed from the fire service. So that's something that we're looking for input from this committee before we go to Lunenburg Regional, with the caveat that if a panel member was involved in, so for example, was a member of the department or was the subject of one of the concerns, they obviously couldn't sit on the panel, and we would adopt similar definitions for a closely connected person, so that there was no appearance of or actual conflict of interest. So the panel would then review the report from the investigator and determine what remedial actions would be appropriate, and that would be recommended to council, who would make the final decision. The range of possible remedial actions identified in the workshop were some additional training relating to what the infraction was related to, the issue at hand, an apology, suspension from the executive of the department, or removal from the executive and the department. So again, we're looking for comments from the committee before we move this on to the next stage of consultation. Yep.
Removal from the executive and from the department, or just of the department?
Oh, yes, sorry. Yeah, removal from the executive of the department.
Okay. Again, still be a member of the department.
So that's following along the principle of this is intended to address senior officers.
Yes.
If the department felt like the violation of the senior officer was grave enough, they may decide through their own processes to remove them from the department.
Okay.
But the intention here is to respect the autonomy of the departments and their existing personnel policy.
Yeah, when it gets down to there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Understood.
That's the reasoning, but that's, again, these are recommendations from staff, so that's certainly open to discussion. And I believe Councillor Smith had a question or a comment.
I was wondering about if there's been thought, I don't see it here, what the status of the fire service member is while the investigation is going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, thinking about the code of conduct for municipal elected officials,
mm-hmm.
there is some thinking about if it's a vexatious complaint during an election period or just ahead of an election period, then the complaint is put on hold until that election is done.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just thinking in terms of, you do have annual elections for executives. Those are just two things that we might want to anticipate.
Mm-hmm. Yes, neither of them were addressed during the workshop. They're interesting points, for sure. Yeah. I think that...
Unless it's a very... Like, if it's a very serious complaint, I just wonder if maybe we want to leave that up to the investigator, like, have that as a step of the process,
mm-hmm.
where they decide if it has merit. And if they decide that it's serious enough that there needs to be kind of a suspension of duties during mm-hmm. the investigation.
That would be certainly be an effective way to address it. I'd look for input from the committee if we want to include that in a draft that we send to Lunenburg Regional.
Wrong, or I'm misunderstanding this. Would we not... It's training any one of those four things, isn't it?
We're backing up a touch.
Okay.
So Councillor Smith has raised a question.
Oh, we're backwards further.
Yeah. So this is a question relating to there's a complaint. An incident occurs. A complaint
yes.
is lodged.
Yes.
The investigator is going to look to determine if it's... if there's merit for investigating the complaint. So Councillor Smith has suggested adding...
She's just behind where we are. I'm sorry. I'm moved ahead. She stayed back there.
But it's an important clarification.
It is, now that I see where she's at.
Yeah.
I was in this section looking and saying, well, we already can remove them from there, right?
Yes, so at this point, suggesting that the investigator could recommend that a member be suspended from... department activities until the complaint is resolved?
Yes.
Or not, depending on the severity of the
investigation. Oh, yes, you wouldn't have to, yes.
Right,
it would be
up to the investigator
yep.
whether or not they could continue as usual or not.
Or not.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with Councillor Smith. That
yeah.
should be... Right. Alcohol or
yeah.
drug related, you wouldn't want them... driving until
yeah
right
okay
so I agree with Councillor
so
Smith I
yeah.
think that should be added
yes
yeah.
just for thought suppose a complaint come in that was more serious, it may also involve more than the municipality, it may be criminal code as well, so yeah. then it could be a third party like RCMP investigating or that kind of thing as well. So then it goes above us.
Yeah, we can certainly include some language in it that would identify that if anything arose of a criminal nature, in parallel to the review to determine the appropriateness of the remaining involved in the department, those matters would be referred to the appropriate enforcement agency. Yeah. Good suggestion. Thank you. Okay. And so then the second one is around a vexatious complaint. So just thinking about it, the intention of the preliminary step of determining if there's some merit to it may address that, particularly given the fact that rather than being a four-year cycle, it's a one-year cycle, so there would be several periods of interruption. Okay. So unless another committee member has a concern, we'll leave off the concern about the vexatious complaint, given that there is a two-step to launching an investigation. But we'll add the issue about possible temporary removal from duties during the investigation and some language around referring criminal matters to the RCMP. Okay, excellent. This is really great feedback. Thank you. So that we've identified a range of options for that remedial action. And council makes the final decision on recommendation from the panel. And then we would need confirmation that what had been recommended was put in place. And the mechanism for enforcement for that would be through our registration process. So currently, fire departments have to register to be an emergency services provider. And we do have some minimum standards built into that now. So, for example, pump testing has to occur. And so we just adopt the similar graduated compliance model where you work with the department to help make sure that they can implement those things. And if they're having issues or objections, you work through those. The ultimate enforcement tool is if a senior officer has been determined to have violated the code of conduct and it's a serious breach that requires their removal and the department won't remove them, then the municipality would have included in the policy the option to deregister the department until that had been addressed. So then we'd be looking at mutual aid to provide for fire service for that community until the issue could be resolved.
Just one more question. The final decision of council would be communicated in writing. And there's a lot about this taking place in camera as far as like the panel's discussion and recommendations. Mm-hmm. Is there ever a time when this would come to a public council meeting? Like, would the final result have to?
So that's something we could provide some more detail on. The intention of handling it in camera is it's parallel to dealing with personnel matters. Also, if there is for lack of a better word, if there's victims involved, not to have to publicize the details of the situation. But the motion from council would have to identify the individual that was receiving the remedial action and what that remedial action was. So it would identify there's a breach of this section of the code. It would identify who it was and what had been asked of to take place. Okay, so those are the major elements that we would like to consult with Lunenburg Regional on. I'm interested in further comments and discussion from the committee, and then there's one particular question that does need to be answered, as it wasn't addressed in the workshop, is who would make up that small panel of folks that would review the investigator's report? So I have a general question. Sure. Yep.
Question for Mr. DeMatt, through you, please. Your last statement you made before you addressed Councillor Smith about reassigning duties for a fire district, maybe through mutual aid. Can you give me clarification on what the concept is there that you're telling us?
So we wouldn't want a relationship issue or a dispute between an individual fire department and a municipality to affect coverage of the fire protection for the residents in that community. And so if we were forced into a situation where the department was not complying with the recommendation that it comes through the independent investigator and then the panel and then been approved by council, and council was forced to deregister the department, we would want to make sure that we were working with the neighboring departments so that those residents weren't punished with a lack of fire protection because of this particular code of conduct issue by one member of the department.
Having explained it like that makes sense in the fact that you're dealing with a bad child that won't accept discipline. So you have to find a different way to address it. But if the issue is with a fire chief or a deputy chief, most departments have other officers they could assume responsibility. I would think that what you're saying is if the entire executive didn't want to play the game, then I would certainly want to take... Yeah. So I wouldn't want to take away the fire service that represents that department if it's only a chief or only a deputy. If the other part of the department is trying to play the perfect process that we have in place.
Yep.
I think what you're saying is in the most extreme measures.
Absolutely.
So that being said, if we're going to make that statement, I would like it in parentheses in the most extreme case because sometimes these presentations take a life of their own where someone thinks they heard something. I've gone through this before. That's not what we said. Oh, well, that's the way we understood it. So just so that we're perfectly clear, because it's easy to get burnt.
That's certainly a useful clarification, just to be very clear that, you know, we've not come even close to that scenario with, for example, the pump testing requirements. So they're already in the policy is a process that could result in the deregistration of a department for not complying with our fire department registration policy. It's not a scenario that we've occurred. We have had some departments that have had some issues complying with that standard, but that's why we have a fire service coordinator. So Chris has worked with them and developed a plan to get them in compliance. And that's absolutely what we expect to happen. That this is, if we were simply to create a code of conduct and then have a review process, as has been the case with municipal elected officials, if there isn't some relationship to some form of enforcement in the most extreme example, then it's not an effective document. And because fire departments are independent organizations, it's not the same thing. If we had a municipal staff member who was conducting municipal business while under the influence of alcohol, we have a very clear employer relationship. So we can address that. If we can't address it, you can terminate. But it's a different scenario with the fire service because they're not only are they volunteers, but they're volunteers for separate organizations. And so the registration is the piece of the governance puzzle that connects them to the municipality. And so that's what we see as the ultimate tool that has to get us there. But we see all of the other steps and the work of this committee and the work of your fire services coordinator making that only the very last resort.
I'm satisfied. I'm just cautioning.
So during the process of the workshops, some of these discussions did come up, like some of those comments did come up, right? And some of the Lunenburg regional meetings when we talked about this prior to the workshop taking place. So there was some discussions around that kind of incident and what would happen in that. And it was like if all the other things failed to take place and nobody wanted to take any action at the department level because of the relationship with the chief or whatever the chief officer might be, and nobody's willing to make any change or move, then this might be the only result. Most of the times you would be able to resolve it and things like that. So we had some good discussions on that. It went well. And I think everybody, you know, there was reservations like you had. But when it was explained out that, you know, it would be like an extreme condition that would have to happen. But there had to be some kind of a mechanism in place in case there was no other avenue for it to come to agreement.
And if I could also add, and it'll bring us back to the question that I have for the committee, the way that we've recommended it be laid out is designed to give confidence and integrity to the process. So the independent review does that partially, coming to a panel with fire service members so that it's not simply a decision of council, which could in some circumstances, I suppose, be perceived as an attempt to try and control an individual department. And then also the final approval of council, which would be necessary for most municipal business, but also makes sense in terms of the complementing that whole array. So you have the independent review, you have the fire service perspective, and the council perspective. So it's not knee-jerk, and it's easily defensible in terms of the conclusion that you've come to. So again, all of those things I think would help a department as a whole, even if there was resistance from an individual, the department as a whole to see that it was there was a fair process put in place to arrive at that conclusion, and that would, I think, help avoid a situation where you have to even consider something like temporary deregistration. So then the question of the membership of that panel is something that I'd like some input on. Recognizing that it does provide some of that check and balance, would the committee be better served to seek nominations from the broader fire service, or is that incorporated in the annual general meeting and your representatives are here and so those members should be selected?
A non-firefighter this committee, when you nominate your chair at the beginning, nominate your committee members for that year if you want to do it. Because you may have a political opinion as well as a fire service opinion on the matter, right? So I'm thinking it could be from this committee, my thoughts. And we would appoint that group on an annual basis or a term, just a thought.
But then it would come back to council for council to also have a decision on this, correct? And a council member would also sit on the committee. Would that get... They could possibly sit on the committee if you form the committee from the people sitting around the table now.
Yeah.
Could that get messy?
All right.
It's no different than being on the PAC and making a recommendation.
Mm-hmm. But it could also be satisfied if you...
This could be about a single person's future. I don't know. It seems a little messier than just a PAC recommendation to me.
You could constitute the panel to be members of the fire service and members at large from this committee.
Yeah.
Or you could simply ask for nominations from the fire service themselves. So if you wanted to create some more distance from council, because all council would be involved in the final decision.
I'll go with the majority. It was just a thought.
Yep.
That was just my opinion. I feel that this is an this committee is executive committee, and you've got a private person and a third party investigation to begin with, excluding this group, right? And it only gets to this group from the decisions of that investigation, right? So, and yes, maybe council, maybe members at large, and fire service people that are on this committee, because it is quite a problem to get to that. So,
from this, can I talk?
Sure. Yes.
From this committee, the three representatives, one is from the fire service, would be, one could be at large from this committee, and one could be a councillor. And guess what? All three of them may think differently, but collectively, knowing the facts, it would be the same as a jury. They would come to a decision that they all felt comfortable with. So I consider anyone that's on this committee a professional.
Part of that is it's new, it's the first time. We'll experience things as we go along and determine if, in fact, that may not be the way to go. But I think to start off, we could start here. It would be my opinion.
Sorry, I had one more question about if this, I don't see it in the report, if it addresses timing. For example, I think it's, you know, when complaints like this are lodged and addressed, it's good to do it in a timely fashion. And even if we, like, we don't want to get in, maybe we don't want to get into putting a deadline for the investigator, because maybe it could be complex, but even just the value that it will be done in a timely fashion, I think would be good to signal in a policy so that people aren't left hanging too long.
Yeah, I think that's a wise thing to add, and I think it's also it's more possible to put some timelines on acknowledging receipt and determining if there's merit, and then the length of the investigation could obviously vary. So we could identify that part as timely, and I can have a look for some reasonable timelines for receipt and acknowledgement and then determination of whether or not there's merit.
Yeah.
Does that sound good to the committee?
I think so, yes.
Okay.
So, Alex, I have a question. I'm back kind of at the independent investigator, third party. What are your thoughts on that individual? Like what?
Council has to have one appointed for their own code of conduct inquiries.
Okay.
So my thought is, for efficiency's purposes, jump on that contract.
Oh, okay.
Yep. So it's already someone that's arm's length from the municipality.
Okay.
Their only relationship to the municipality is the contract to investigate.
So in fact, we could say that here, that
yeah.
independent investigator.
Yeah.
Just for clarity, I just would like. Good. Anybody else have any other questions?
So will information about that investigator be shared with the LRFES when this report is sent?
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
So So if there's no more questions or suggestions, then I can take these revisions and prepare a presentation for delivery to the Lunenburg Regional Fire and Emergency Services Group. Okay. And hopefully they'll have a chance to review and give some feedback to this committee. Yeah. And then we can work on drafting.
Okay, so we also had a discussion in the workshop about driver training and to some driver standards that are in place and what's being done now in our municipality. So the background was the importance of the volunteer fire service and their emergency response in relation with the municipalities. And the chief officers have a big portion of that leadership and safety and to make sure that they everybody's in compliance with regulations and policies of the department and of the municipality and the province when it comes to those things, and to make sure that everybody's safe and effective in delivering their service. And in February 2025, there was a chief officer in Cumberland County that had an issue on the scene when he struck a victim, and he had previous impaired driving incidents that came to light. And the incident prompted discussions within the municipality's fire service on some of the significant risks if somebody unlicensed were to drive apparatus during scenes or whatever, or even their own personal vehicles was driving and they didn't have any licensing to do so, but then implications that could happen if there was an incident or an accident while they were doing those activities. The province does have a very broad spectrum of licenses for operation of motor vehicles on public roads. One of those is for volunteer firefighters driving air brake vehicles, so up to 14,000 pounds kilograms without air brakes, you can drive that with a Class 5 license. Once air brakes become in place, you have to have an air brake endorsement added to your Class 5 license in order to drive a vehicle with air brakes. And many departments have gone above and beyond that, and they've actually asked for their drivers to have Class 3 licensing, which then kind of takes them to the next level of what the minimum standard of the government is for driving vehicles of those weights. So with the way the Class 5 air brake endorsement works is you read the manual on air brakes, how they work, how they operate, how things are adjusted. You make an appointment, you go write the test, and then you get the endorsement put on your license to be able to drive that vehicle with a Class 5. In order to get a Class 3 license, you have to take more training, and you have to take an actual road test with one of the instructors or the licensing people with the Department of Motor Vehicles to see if you passed the road test portion of the course, and then you would get a Class 3. So a lot of the departments are doing that already, but there are some departments that don't do that. And so there was a discussion of some of those things and how it affects the way some departments have drivers, because they have fewer people that can operate vehicles, so the Class 5 with the endorsement works better. So there was a discussion on the types of licensing training required for different types of apparatus, approaches to reduce risks, and what happens if you have unqualified drivers. So the thoughts were to have a minimum standard for driver operators and what supports would be needed if we were to look at putting something like that into place. And then a lot of the members at the meeting, at the workshops, talked about many were in favor of the Class 3 licensing, and lots, like I said, do that currently. But under the recommendations or the regulations of the Class 5 under the province, a lot of the smaller departments said it would be harder for them to maintain that ability because of people and staffing to have that Class 3 licensing all the time. So they felt that it would be less cumbersome and easier to just to follow the lowest standard that the province has in place, and if departments wish to have that higher standard, they could still do so. So some concerns impact, like I said, about the higher standard with currently required. There's currently a shortage of trained driver operators in some of the service areas, for sure. Costs and time to complete the testing and barriers for volunteers for the Class 3. So there is time involved to learn that. To take some training, take some driver training, and then go book the road test and actually take the road test. So Those are things that all take time, and it's gotten a little easier to do the Class 3, but for a while it was very hard to get a test booked, and then sometimes they had to go to the valley with their apparatus in order to get the testing completed because it wasn't available in the area. So there are some things that kind of hamper the abilities. And I covered like the shortage of staff sometimes to have that done, and some of the struggle with smaller departments to retain sufficient drivers. Some of the strong concepts put forward, identifying steps that could be taken to reduce the risk of unlicensed operators. So if departments were to maintain a list of qualified drivers, I think the last year or two for sure, the insurance companies have actually been asking for drivers' lists of drivers from the fire departments who were qualified drivers or who were listed on their rosters as drivers, and that they would be part of an approved training and program that complies with the provincial requirements. Adoption of internal policies requiring drivers to notify if there's any change in their licensing status. So I know in the past there's been a few times when firefighters were still responding and they may not have had a license in their own vehicles. And then when that came to light, they were dealt with their own departments. Departments receiving like and retaining driver abstracts on a regular cycle. So it was talked like maybe they could do that every couple of years just to get a driver's abstract from the drivers to see that everybody had a good driving record with nothing serious on them. And a regional training program possibly for qualified draw operators could be developed or should be developed, they thought. So that would be something we'd have to look at to see how that would look. I know we do have a local driver trainer that was a professional driver, and he would review drivers for one of the large companies in Halifax and bring back criteria on whether they needed any extra work or if they were good to drive. And some departments utilize him off and on for some review and refresher things, so he's an option that we might be able to utilize if they want to go down that road. Key training program components could include like vehicle-specific orientation, pre-trip inspections, defensive and emergency driving techniques, so there's courses on those. Area familiarization and apparatus, so specific skills for the type of apparatus being driven, and a lot of those can be departmental training. Hands-on evaluation, so actually somebody checking to see that the person can actually do what they need to do to be able to drive vehicles of that class. Documentation of the training for volunteers in the departments, and peer mentorship for new operators. So those are some of the things that we had talked about for key training. Some additional insights around improving of driver training for volunteers were also a possibility of maybe a grant of grants to provide training or municipal organization and funding, bursary or a compensation of some kind for volunteers, time spent while they're doing that type of training, collaboration with departments and municipalities regionally on around that area of driver training and how that would work, and a flexible schedule to fit with the volunteer schedule. So a lot of times it's hard to get access Nova Scotia licensing instructors or examiners at certain times of the day, so evenings and week and a Saturday would be good if that's something that could be booked. And I know they have done some of that where they book, you know, five or six driver training exams in a row to try to mitigate or help people get through that process a little faster. So they have done some of those. And like I say, several of those have been identified as like a draft, as part of our draft training strategies that we had looked at earlier last year when we talked about some of the training strategies. Some of those things were in there for driver training and those kind of things. So it's been on the radar for a bit, and we're just trying to see if we could help come up with some better ideas around that. Given the information on the issues on driver training and recruitment, it wasn't advisable to pursue new mandatory standards for driving to the higher levels and to beyond what the province currently recommends for drivers because of some of the things that were brought up at the meeting on the restrictions and hardships that it could cause. And some of the recommendations that we might that staff may recommend the following actions. Amend the manual registration process so that names and license types could be included for drivers of the apparatus. So how many Class 3 drivers do they have? How many Class 5 with air brake endorsements do they have? Just so we have an idea what kind of, if drivers have the necessary skills or licensing to do what they need to do or drive the vehicles. Discuss development of an amendment of best practice or general operating guidelines. And then we could, adjust or tweak that as needed. So I know Lunenburg Regional had passed a general operating guideline on driver training standards and on some of the driver techniques. So that being approved is more of a generalized standard for them to follow. It's not saying that just because we said that this is approved GOG that we're going to go that way. It just says everybody agrees with the concept, and you can take this and tweak it or utilize it as you wish. So we're just asking if we could have something in the maybe on our registration process that gives us some of the names and some of the practices like that. Addressing the code of conduct over driver training identified in the workshop, that's kind of the strategic. There's no financial implications for the annual registration forms to be updated for the drivers or to develop the GOG. That's kind of so. This, and the main strategic communication, I guess, would be the stakeholders are Lunenburg Regional members as required and content with the GOG on apparatus and drivers. So the work plan is proposed fall within the fire services, or my work plan. Alternatives would be to implement a minimum driver standard that would exceed the provincial standards, and that wasn't really something that they seemed to really have a flavor for, but many are doing it anyway. So, and inclusion, some of the recent provincial underscored importance and adequate control for records for driver training in the fire service. So I know the consultants that went around with the survey that they did with the province, some of the things they asked and some of the things they said are really important are like those types of records for driver training and drivers and those kind of things. Because those are some of the things that they would be looking for if anything were to happen, and to make sure that people had like valid licensing for what they were driving. And there was something else I was going to touch on, and I think I missed it. Anyway, all I'm thinking about, if anybody has any questions or comments, please bring them forward. And if I remember what I was going to say, I'll... Any comments, any questions?
Dean, go ahead. The other year, I had one member of ours challenge me. I did take him out to seat. He challenged me with the Motor Vehicle Act stating, it used to be at one point, I don't know if it is because I did some changes, that you did not have to have a valid class, valid license to drive an emergency vehicle to a fire scene or while a fire scene was in the works. But once the fire scene was over, or the emergency scene was over, then you couldn't drive it back to the hull. It makes no sense, believe me. But anyways, whether that's still in the Motor Vehicle Act or not, I don't know. I haven't looked through it in the last year or two, so that's more than I can tell you. But I think that we should have it in there somewhere. If it, check it if it is in there, and we should make sure that maybe that we don't abide by that law in the Motor Vehicle Act, because that can put us in this serious lawsuit if somebody would take that without a license, get in a car accident, and then you're driving without a license, then it comes an issue.
So that is valid. So that was underneath the Motor Vehicle Licensing Regulation side of the Motor Vehicle Act. So like under 66.1. of the Motor Vehicle Act, it says that the registrar may make changes to the regulations on licensings and the levels of what the licenses are, like 1 through 10 or whatever they are. And then in that section, they changed the, and it's on page 2 of the
205.
Of a report, so that's what I was going to mention, and I kind of briefed over that. So it says, under section 3 of the Motor Vehicle Licensing Registration, under Section 3 of the Motor Vehicle Licensing Regulations, it states that a mechanic, a vehicle salesperson, or a volunteer firefighter may drive any vehicle with a Class 5 license during the performance of their duties. This is still a gray zone, in my opinion, because it says that that's like the very minimum. They can drive this during the performance of their duties. But if there was an accident or something like that, you know, how would that be questioned
in
a court of law? So that's why a lot of them are going with the minimum of the weights in the Class 5 of their brake endorsement.
Yeah, I understand that section of the Motor Vehicle Act. I know that. But there used to be, I don't know if it still is, because like I say they revised the Motor Vehicle Act a couple years ago.
Just replaced
that. Taking it out.
but it was, you didn't even have to have a car, you didn't have to have a valid license to be able to drive an emergency vehicle.
Yeah, it just said.
Period. Like, you could just walk in and drive.
Yeah, so you have to be over.
I got challenged that, and I hauled Buddy out of seat.
Huh. Yeah. I know this was, this, it used to state that at one time in there, and that this is replacing it. It used to say that you could drive it to this emergency scene, but then when the emergency was deemed over, you couldn't drive it. So, like, for maintenance or practicing or anything like that, you weren't really legally allowed to drive that vehicle. And this kind of says, now it says, in the performance of your duty. So they kind of opened the gray zone to cover more areas of the of what you would do in performance of duties.
I think that puts you into an area for a lawsuit.
That's how the standard and regulations are written as they currently are. But anyway, so I just wanted to point that out, that was a comment that somebody had made.
And it's still illegal to tie your horse to the hitching post in town, too. So. But anyway.
So I think there was...
Yes.
You had mentioned something about the fire services review. Is that what you were referencing when you said
they just mentioned about training and how important it was to have records and things like that. That's all I just wanted to mention about the importance they mentioned about having records for training. And we covered that in our discussions prior to that even taking place. And that's why we thought maybe it would be good when we talked about that, having those added to our registration so that we knew what the driving were. And they could do every couple of years do a review to see who had what licensing or if they had anything on their license, like to do that. So that's kind of how we looked at it. And that was before this review took place, but I was just kind of strengthening that fact when that's what they said. But, you know, like, it's, and we all know how important it is to have their current records and good record keeping for stuff that we do and what we have for anything that we do like that, right? So it's a due diligence thing, so for sure.
I certainly know that the group that I sat with outside there that we talked about, you know, we already submit the name of all the firefighters and the date that they started. And, you know, it's just, I think, an expansion of that to include the things that are critical. I mean, even the position, what they're in the department, what they're doing, and class of license that that individual has. And fire departments, the chiefs are all doing that work now. They're all recording it. And, you know, I just think it's just the next step of having the information that can be reviewed and discussed. And when you start doing that, it just makes a point of that someone is checking it, someone's looking at it, and you can see whether there is appropriate people that can actually drive the vehicles in the department, right? So it's, I think, a start on something that is important. And making regulations that it would exceed the province is a bit of a difficult thing to do. I mean, our role is to try to bring as many people into driving a fire vehicle, and you know, if you restrict that to a certain class of a license, then therefore you minimize the possible people, candidates, that are actually going to be able to drive for you. Because the other thing that's changed in many years, Dean, trucks are twice as heavy as they used to be. So you're getting, you know, extremely heavy vehicles. And, you know, it's just you want to make sure people have appropriate class of license for that. So just a few words of...
The recommendation is that the committee move that they direct staff to proceed with the direction identified in the report.
I guess we'd like some discussion from the committee. This one was with the code of conduct. There was lots of convergence of opinions, whereas the driver standards one will have different impacts on some of the departments, and so the recommendation is drawing a middle line there. So I think there's some room for discussion from the committee here. Are you comfortable with what we've suggested as our approach, which is more of a soft touch, looking for supports for training to try and help bring departments along, and in the meantime, doing the record keeping?
So a high school field we're talking from, who's part of this, should be going out to the
Yep. Yes, I think we're hoping for a motion for this one, at least because we're changing what we would be requiring on the annual registration form, and then there'll be other the training elements will come back as part of the training strategy. But a motion would be helpful, I think. I guess because we're doing some more consultation. Yep, exactly, yep.
I'll just say that I appreciate this direction, given the group that I was in had really expressed concern about having standards that were beyond the provincial minimums or what the is already required. I think it's really important that we don't jump the standards beyond what some of the smaller departments can deliver at the moment. And there was also some interesting discussion, because I'm not part of a fire department. It's interesting for me to hear, you know, on the ground from people, you know, just because someone has a higher class license doesn't mean that maybe they're the best person at the time to drive the truck. You know, you might have someone who doesn't have that license yet who is actually more confident in an emergency. It was just interesting to hear some of the on-the-ground details of deployment. But, yeah, I do support this this direction at this point, and to look how we can support training rather than to hem people in too much at this point.
We're getting back to groups. I just want to my group was the opposite. They were up here exceeding, and you know, they made the points and to the point that they wanted to actually have a separate classification in the Motor Vehicle Act for fire vehicles, actually.
Yeah,
so
I didn't hear that.
You know, so we went way up there, and then but when we got back here, I read my words or spoke my words, and then, you know, I listened to the others, and then you get another perspective from other groups, right? So it puts it in perspective, and you're quite right. My personal opinion is favoring what you just said, you know, so it's my opinion.
Got moved by that the committee directs staff to proceed with the directions identified in the report, driver training standards, dated September 4th,
2025. Yeah. I think the two reports that were presented to us here tonight and which were circulated earlier encompassed a lot of discussion, a lot of ideas, and when I read them, I thought they were very professionally done. So whoever had a input into that, whether it was Alex or whether it was our recording secretary or the team, I want to compliment you on that, because the topic... Everyone had different ideas when we talked over this, but when I read this, it encompassed everything we talked about, and I thought it was professionally done. I don't always mention that, but I wanted to tonight.
mic. So the new data that we asked to be collected from the registration for this year was how many different levels of training there were, and just as an idea, so level one fire trained, 276. Level one pro board certified by the Nova Scotia Firefighter School, there were 36. So that was like, that's a North American standard that's recognized in North America for firefighters to take that pro board certification. So in theory, you could go to any fire department and join them with that certification training. Safety officers, there were 10 departments, 10 safety officers in the departments. Typically, there's usually like one if you have one. And then there's occupational health and safety officers. If they have a program, there were five. Officers in total, 168, and officers with training were 101. So just some idea of what's out there and the different types of training that's been done. These are some of the calls that were done. So if you add these up, it's not going to probably add up to a total 100% because some of them were so small that I just kind of left them out. I just let the big ones stay in here. But the numbers of calls are accurate. So there was in 2024, there were 1,254 calls. And the year before that, there were 1,455. So the volume drops and goes up every year, depending. And some of the bigger ones, so there was 191 motor vehicle collisions, 227 medicals, structure fires, 30, so 2%. Fire alarms is pretty high. Mutual aid, 396, or 32%. Power lines are 3%. Grass and woods fire, 4%. Chimney fire is 4%. So when you add them all up over all the departments, you know, it's a small percentage, but there's still a fairly high number associated with some of those. And 87% was miscellaneous, or 87 were miscellaneous, so 7%. So those are things assisting a public person or something like that, just something that's not in the normal realm. And if I put everything in there, it'd be so small you wouldn't even be able to read it. There'd be too much information there. So it just kind of gives you an idea that what they respond to in the fire service and that they're, you know, overall they're busy and there's lots of different things they respond to. There's some of the funding things. So I added a few this year just from the budget. Oops. Just from the budget area, I added some things to it for some of the numbers that were there. So WC premiums, the budget's $51,800. And recruitment and retention items, as recruitment and retention itself, there's a $12,000 line for that. The employee assistance or firefighter and family program is $18,500. The leadership and soft skills, there's $10,000 for that. So we've done a couple. We've done one last year, and there's another fire department already looking for it this year. So we're hoping to get one to two this year if we can. And we had good reviews and stuff from the different departments when we put those on. And I've reached out to another person that provides that type of training to see what she can put together also. So we're trying to build a few different facilitators that we can have that we can call on. And as we do that, we'll get reactions and reviews from the fire service as to which ones they like best and which ones fit. And we can change and manipulate that as we need to. There's an annual recognition grant of $12,000, and there's a post-merger grant of $15,300. That's for tri-district fire. When they joined, it's three departments or four departments. They came out of the big mix of the matching grant or the funding grant because they were three departments into one, and they were taking three different sums of money. So we put them out of the puzzle and gave them that three amount together to make the amount that it's there, and then all the other departments stay in as single entity. So it just kind of made it fair for the departments that were still a single entity with one department. Approved grants for 2025 with a 2% increase. So the matching grant was $46,816. The admissible grant was $70,781. Training grant was $10,038. Insurance grant was $59,751. And the personnel insurance grant was $12,038. So if you look at the total from those two, outside of the fire tax rates, there's $321,000 and some change in extra monies that go out. And I think there's also one there for fire prevention materials that I didn't add in here also. So there are some, you know, other initiatives and incentives that we're trying to put in there for to help entice and do things for recruitment and retention. And to recognize the valued service that he provided us as a volunteer fire service. Funds raised by the departments in Nova Scotia for the 50-50 draw, so the total proceeds from the 50-50 was $722,909, so that's a pretty big number when you think about it. And it really helps a lot of departments out for buying equipment or putting towards apparatus or whatever they need to help provide services without doing the fundraising behind it. And there are still some departments that fundraise, and there was $453,666 that some departments still raise. And there's one or two departments in the county that raise a large fund, and there's one department that raises close to $200,000 a year just in fundraising itself. And they have a group that helped do the fundraising, so it's not the firefighters that are always doing it. They have a group that helps do the fire chief's always there, but they do have a group that helps with the fundraising, so that's pretty impressive. So this is just some of the recruitment and retention things, like I say, that's still ongoing. Advertising, newsletters, and the flyers, that's done out through the year. Sarah looks after that. Numbers have stabilized, but you can see they fluctuate up and down by 20 or so. So that's just the nature of the beast. It's a cyclic thing. So we try to, you know, keep the word out there and try to have information put out there so it's still in the thoughts of the residents, so that if somebody wants to help and wants to volunteer, they can. Oops, we have the EAP program for volunteers, leadership soft skills, and then I do some grounding and centering resiliency type exercises for departments, so I've done a couple of those also. So just one of the little specialty things I like to do. And that's kind of it in a nutshell. I like that little one right there. Teasing my brother about his career. I asked what kind of crazy person runs into a fire. His reply, one that is well trained. So I like that.
I just have a question, and maybe I should know this, but I understood there might be a fire services committee meeting scheduled for the 6th day of November. The Nova Scotia Federation of Municipalities will be having their annual general meeting on that date, combined with others, and I suspect there could be three or four councillors missing. So I only bring that to your attention in case